Yes, sir. Let's dive in on a good off day episode where we're going to bring up a couple of quotes from the last game. What is Steve Nash trying to accomplish with these rotations and getting rest for Kevin Durant? Does Kevin Durant want to have rest? And does he understand he probably needs it? Beyond that, though, it's rotations and ratings, best lineups for Brooklyn, and why, again, we do find ourselves coming back to the same theme, Doug. Give me a 100% healthy team, and I'll tell you why some things are not as concerning as we may think.
Oh, yeah, because there are some concerns, man. We're going to hear the word danger, the danger point here on some of the minutes. Again, coming up, the secret is just to get everyone happy, healthy, and we'll be good to go. We have a packed episode, except for this one. We break down a lot of numbers, a lot of lineups, all the good stuff. But first, the theme music.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Yes, sir. It's the Locked On Nets podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. It's your team, the Brooklyn Nets, every single day. I am at Adam Armbrecht covering the New York Football Giants. Clean slate over on the One Giant podcast for Big Blue. And of course, over there is Blue Checkmark Certified Fresh, Doug Norrie, owner-operator DFSR for all your daily fantasy projections, DraftKings, FanDuel. If you need draft coverage? No. If you need projections on a daily basis, it's DFSR. It's Doug Norrie. He'll take care of you over there. We come in on the off day. Lots to get into. Going to look back at some quotes taking away from that disappointing loss to the Portland Trailblazers on that little West Coast jaunt before the Nets will again, Doug, give us that sweet sensation of watching a 10 p.m. tip-off on Wednesday night against the Chicago Bulls.
Look, you get paid to watch basketball, so you can't complain. And I would say, things being equal, I like the 7 o'clock starts or 7:30 starts a little better. Hey, look, if you're in the Nets streets right now, it's like not all that great of a feeling here. There's plenty to talk about. I think there's definitely some stuff that we want to get into when it comes to maybe some problems the team is having and some concerns or maybe why the sky's not falling too. But it's always better to talk about this stuff after wins, and the loss to the Blazers, I think, still kind of stings a little bit. Like, I think it actually has opened up some reasons to look a little deeper into what's going on with this Nets team, and not to make a ton out of like one regular season game, but there's been some concerns over the short term for sure.
Yeah, we got some quotes from Steve Nash, from Kevin Durant. We'll get into some minutes. We'll get into some ratings, best four-man lineups. And I think that some things are being uncovered here that maybe we won't worry about in another 2 months. But right now, it's concerning enough that you want to examine it. We thank you for making this your first listen of the day. And remind you, by the way, that today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. It's the easy place where you go to check out prizepicks.com and use promo code NBA or go to the App Store and download the app today. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. So go and enjoy that, please, friends. Kick it off here with a quote from Steve Nash coming out of that loss and regarding the energy level and just where the team was trying to get this thing across the finish line. Nash said, there were some good stretches, but overall, I just thought we didn't have the juice to follow through and finish the game. He went on to say that, yes, you're going to look to try to find some minutes here along the way to get some key players like a Kevin Durant and even like a James Harden, though he wasn't in this game, some rest. Kevin Durant, when asked about it, said, who cares? that's what championship teams go through, a little bit of adversity. Everybody's schedule is effed up right now. He used the full word. But when you come out of those, Doug, both these guys went on. There's a couple extra pieces here. I got Doug all over tonight. There's a couple of extra lines about here. As I said, Steve Nash said, we're going to try to find a game here somewhere to sit down Durant, get him some rest. But, you know, Durant also came back and said, it is what it is. If I got to play 40, so what? I'm going to play. But if they tell me to sit out, I'm going to do the same thing. No, I'm not concerned, but whatever coach wants to give me a day, I'll support him, but I'm not looking to get one. Just from there, real quick, this has that vibe of, so you could have sat him down at some point here. Like, he would accept the rest. We've been operating under this assumption that, like, hey, it's really hard to tell Kevin Durant to sit down a game. And while it obviously is, also, he's going to sit down. Like, he's gonna take the rest if you give it to him. And this Portland game, even though at the back end you go, well, you end up losing it, what would it look like without Durant? It could have been the very much, who cares? You get the night off. Let's see what Kyrie does in his second game, and we'll live with the results.
Yeah, coming off the overtime game, like, we didn't get into this too much because I think the loss was just a stinger against the Spurs. But, you know, coming on after that overtime win against the Spurs on Sunday, and then going cross country, that really is the time to basically say, hey, you're just going to take a night off. Like, this is a scheduled loss, and just not play you because we're in a weird area when it comes to, like, just the timing of this. Like, this never happens. You never go across the country on a back-to-back to begin with. You played a ton of minutes the game before. They were high leverage minutes because you went to overtime. So, like, there is a world where that conversation probably should have happened prior to that game. And there's been sort of an unwillingness, I think, at times to do this. And maybe that, you know, maybe Harden with the, you know, whatever they classified it as a hyperextension of the knee. It sure sounded like rest to me, like with him. So
I think maybe the knee knock with De'Ron Sharpe in the pick and roll on the defensive end. There was a play that happened there, but I think it's fair.
And he's supposed to play. And he's supposed to play Wednesday. So it's like it's maybe it was just like his turn basically because he was a little banged up and they didn't really just want to punt the game. So I get it. And you just have to probably look harder for these moments during the season and just say, hey, we're just going to take some losses. We might not be the number one seed. Like, this is just what's going to happen because we'll get into a second. But once again, they're starting to hit the danger zone with the minutes here on some of these guys. And they're just going to have to be a really concentrated collective effort to say you're just not playing because here's what he can't do. What Nash has shown that they cannot do is manage the minutes within the game. Like, that is proven. Once the game has started and that first whistle has blown, Nash, whatever else we want to say about him, what we do know about him right now is the minutes are not managed once the game starts at all. Like, he plays a ton of minutes. They're all close games, and he plays a ton of minutes. So we already know Nash does not really seem to have this ability, like, once they're actually going up and down the court. So short of that, they just have to put something else in place to make sure it doesn't get too dangerous here.
And that's the piece of it where I do think when you come into games like these, maybe the premise is, hey, it's Portland. So, of course, Durant, you're going to start. But by midway through the third quarter, we're going to have this well in hand and you'll start to get rest. Now, when you get there and it's too close of a game and now Durant's in the flow of it and he wants to win it, all those other factors come.
Well, that's
into
all
play.
Well and good, but that literally never happens with the Nets.
What I was going to say, so, yeah. And now, like, at this point of the season, you could have had that theory along the way. But after a handful of games where you go, boy, these guys on paper, we should have totally trounced them. And yet here we are trailing, by the way, not even only being up by 3 or 5 points where you say, the game still hangs in the balance. No, this is where you're trying to come back and you've been running Durant or Harden and now Kyrie Irving for significant minutes. I think now that sample size is big enough where you could just say, yeah, that's what we should be doing. But it's not what's happening right now. So until we prove that we're capable of that on a game when we plan on playing Durant a full 40 minutes because it's his night to go. If you blow somebody out now, the next time around, I think that there's an opportunity for that. Until you prove that, I have to go on the air on the side of caution and just say, this is an off night for you. Sorry. Win, yeah. Lose, draw. Doesn't matter what it looks like. You're off. Go ahead and take the seat.
Or you hope that they can stick to in-game rotations, but they never, like I said, they're never able to do that. So it's just like they're never able to make that call. And when it comes to the minutes right now, you know, we went into the COVID like protocol piece and we're like, okay, this is a good rest. And these guys, like, they're dialing back the minutes, and they were both Harden and Durant have been in the top 10 for minutes. And then it went all the way back. Like, after all those weeks leading into Christmas for both of them, it really got dialed back. Well, guess what? Worries. It's all right back. It's all right back to where it was. And because now, in terms of overall minutes on the season, Durant is 14th overall in the whole league in total minutes this season. And by the way, that's not even on a per game basis. He's played way less games than a lot of the other group that sits above him. Harden's 19th. Durant is playing the second most minutes in the league per game this season at 37.35 behind Fred VanVleet. At 37.47. And then guess who's third? Da-na-na, James Harden, 36.85. Like, on a per minute basis, this is just not where you need to be with these guys. Not where you need to be. Like, this is like we're pushing up against like the sort of criminal behavior around the minutes that these guys are playing on a night to night basis for a team where regular season wins. There's like massive diminishing returns on regular season wins for this team at this point. Like, there's just no other way to put it. Like, this cannot be the main focus. And yet, for whatever reason, I said it three times in this first 10 minutes, but once that game starts, they do not have the ability to manage the minutes. Like, they cannot do it for whatever reason. It's just totally impossible for them.
Yeah, and I'm not, this isn't an excuse. I'm willing to just understand between Kevin Durant's personality, Steve Nash, former player, high level guy, right? Once it starts, it's I want to win this game, and you kind of lose focus on that.
Sure.
Now, it's okay for Durant to do that. It's far less acceptable for Steve Nash to lose sight of where the minutes are and get swept up in the idea of I want to win this game. So we can keep up on this and also get into some of these rotations and some of the ratings, touch back to these last couple of games where we've seen some rookies and there's some positive things. But before we do, Doug, what do people know about Prize Picks?
Oh, baby. We talked about DFS at the beginning. If you're in the DFS, you might have been over one of those other bigger operators. You know that you're up against folks with thousands of lineups and huge bankrolls, and it's you versus them. No, not on Prize Picks. It's you just versus the projections in the very best DFS prop game on the market. Prize Picks makes it super easy. You go over there, you just pick over-unders on points, rebounds, assists. If you're NBA, they do every sport as well. And then you can combine them to put 2 to 5 picks together to really kind of bump those odds all the way up. They have more props than any other DFS prop operator out there. You can even throw in some bench players too. Like if you're really just into this stuff and you can kind of just tell by looking sometimes if a number seems too high or too low, Prize Picks has you covered. Really, really simple to use. Interface is really sleek. It's just like I said, it's the best prop game operator out there. Right now, if you use the promo code MBA when you sign up for a new account, you're gonna get a 100% instant deposit match up to $100. So you deposit $100, they will match that $100. You pick 2 to 5 players, you do the over-unders on their projections, go up to 10x on any entry. That's 10 times. You can do mixed sports, like I said, combine some NFL picks with some NBA picks. You're good to go. Use the promo code MBA at prizepicks.com today. Go to your app store, download the app. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. If you're not playing Prize Picks, you honestly don't know what you're missing.
All right, so I want to dive into these rotations, some of the ratings around a lot of these players. The one thing that I'll say is, because I'll just shout out that I got into one of those Twitter spaces with a lot of Nets fans. We had a really good conversation. Coming off of that last game, though, there's a groundswell, my friend, around these rookies. And if you think that, we've talked about the value, obviously Cam Thomas showing some things. We've been talking about Kessler Edwards a lot. You had that great conversation with Lucas Kaplan from Nets Daily around it. Fans on De'Ron Sharp, they're all in now, boys. Like that was all that they needed to say that this is a guy that needs to play significant minutes. I'm just curious because we talked about it after that game and said, was it a really impressive run for him? Yes. Is there still a lot of flaws in his game? Yes. I just want to, for real quick, do you think that it's capable of, or are you changing a little bit of your perspective on where De'Ron can go in the short term? Do you think that game showed you a little bit more of where his development is that maybe you thought it was going to take another month, another 2 months, or the entirety of this season?
Is my opinion on change? Not really. I think that this is pretty much what I thought he was now, which is kind of like higher energy, pretty physical. The reason it stands out is because the guys, I think we talked about this last episode, maybe I kind of get sometimes confused, but he stands out in terms of the Nets right now because the Nets just don't actually have anyone else like him. Right. and that's good for him. Like they need kind of a guy like this. They need a big body who doesn't really get pushed around all that often, has a really good nose for the ball, can ball hawk, especially around the offensive defensive glass. Like the Nets really don't have that guy. Claxton is definitely not that guy. Blake is not that guy at this point. And so just having someone that has sort of that skill set stands out in a way that really makes him look different. I don't think he's like worlds better than other people sort of with this skill set. It's just that the Nets don't have another guy like this, and that's why it's good. I'm all for getting him a few more minutes here and there. I don't think he's a huge needle mover in terms of the wins and losses piece at this point, but I do think there's a world where he can become that. And so developing him in a meaningful way, I think, is important. But I don't think, and I don't know if you're suggesting this or not, maybe you're not, but I don't think like inserting him into playing, I'm going to make this number, like 16 minutes a game has a huge effect on whether the Nets are like winning more or less games. I don't think I'm there on that. I just think that his minutes look different and it's encouraging for sure, but I don't think you still want to play him major minutes over guys like Aldridge or over even guys like Claxton, other bigs. I'm putting those other bigs as like bigs that he cannot play with right now.
Right.
And so like you can't share the court really with those guys. So in terms of that, I still think he should be behind the pecking order, and that's not a knock on him. It's really been encouraging what we've seen, but I don't think my opinion's changed all that much.
Yeah, the reason why I brought it up is just because I got some sense from the fans that the way that De'Ron Sharpe performed in that game, also contrasting how Nicholas Claxton ran into early foul trouble, it kind of became this butting of the heads of, well, is De'Ron Sharpe more valuable in a certain way because they lack this physicality, this bigger
he's
body
not, no,
guy
he's
to
not.
Bring in there?
I'll cut that off right now.
My response was yes, but just because he's good at something that Nicholas Claxton isn't necessarily as good at, doesn't change the fact that Nicholas Claxton is incredibly good at specific areas. One, pairing up with Harden, and we've talked about that before, but the defensive piece of it, his ability to have that versatility and switchability on the defensive end, is as important as anything you're going to get. So it's interesting because they're both young guys. It all feels relative, I think, to a segment of the fan base to say, well, then give me the more physical guy. We want a guy that can bang some bodies, and I can understand it. And also, I think that we're a ways away from that point. So just thought it was worth touching on that here briefly before we get into now. The meat and potatoes of it is, you and I have consistently talked about how, and you said this over on Twitter, what's the most important thing that the Nets team do to improve their team? Get healthy, get Kyrie back, even as a part-time player, get Joe Harris back. That starts to balance out these rotations in a significant way. And if I told you right now over on Raptor Ratings, which is a really good over on 538.com, how many players do you think right now, and this won't include Kyrie Irving, let's just assume that he would be a plus. How many plus offensive players do the Nets have on their roster right now?
Offensive Raptor?
Yep.
I was locked and loaded to say Blake on defensive because I know that he's always rates really high over there. Okay, offensive rating, it's got to be, I mean, obviously Durant, it's got to be Harden. I can't probably be Mills anymore because the shooting's been so bad. Does anyone else even play offense for this team?
Patty Mills is still there. So it's 4.5, 3.2 for Durant and Harden, respectively. Patty Mills is still a plus 2.6 offensive rating. And then LaMarcus Aldridge.
I was going to say Aldridge just because he shot so well early in the season. And it would be hard to be a negative from that perspective. But after that, they literally don't have another guy who plays offense. That's played
closest guy, by the way, is DeAndre Bembry, who's almost a neutral. He's your next best offensive player. And then you get into, by the way, just behind him, just saying, Kessler Edwards on some small minutes. He marks the sixth best offensive player you have. Any of these guys take a notch down when you talk about having Kyrie there. That's just the first jumping off point around not being overcritical around what's been going on over this stretch. Now, you can be critical in the sense that, well, where are you going to get this offense from? But again, I named two players that automatically you think will end up in the plus, although Joe Harris early this season had an incredible negative Raptor rating for himself. But you'd like to think that if you add in Kyrie Irving and you add in Joe Harris, and then by the way, Cam Thomas is going to be a positive on the night once these minute sizes get big enough for him, although that's also in the negative as of right now. Is that okay to sit here and say, we'll get there eventually? Because it just feels like only having four guys to varying degrees you can really rely on offensively, that's a red flag that could last forever, depending on how, put Kyrie in there and say five.
Yeah, so we went through this last season too, where the whole season was kind of like, oh, we'll get there on that, right? Oh, it'll come together. Oh, eventually the three guys will play together and we'll get enough minutes, or eventually this will happen, or eventually they'll come back from injury. And then all of a sudden it was like the season was over and was the playoffs and we had one good series and then it all kind of ended, right? At some point time does kind of run out on some of this stuff. We're 6 weeks into the Joe Harris injury now, he has not resumed basketball activities from what I think the latest word is. So it does not seem like he's all that close to being back. We already know the Kyrie thing. That's going to be hard to just level out those minutes short of just a mandate change or he gets vaxxed. So who knows? But it does feel like we're now on season two of, hey, just wait. Once it's all good, we'll be good. And at some point you just can't keep saying that. And so I'm with you on the fixes are super obvious and they're elementary obvious. It's just have the guys that you thought all we're going to play on the team to start the year. And I don't think we're even having conversations like this. I actually think they're probably steamrolling the league at this point. Right. And it just hasn't been that way. And we're just with each passing day, it just doesn't seem like it's going to be that way even either too. So I don't know really what the solution that there's no internal solution on the offense from their team now. Those numbers will not really get better. If anything, they got an unbelievable run hot stretch from Aldridge to even get him into the positive. I don't even know if we can always count on that, flamethrower mid-range shooting for the rest of his life. And so, or So I just, it's not coming internally at this point. You just have to hope that these other contextual pieces just work themselves out. I don't know. I just don't know what the other solution is. And I hate to be pessimistic about it, but it's like, it's simultaneously very, very simple and unlikely to have that simplicity play out in a way that like we actually see the meaningful effects of it.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because for all the excitement that we've had around some of these younger players, again, Kessler Edwards is the closest one to being a value at both ends of the court with consistency. Cam Thomas's offensive game is going to get there, but when you take everything into consideration, not just that he's scoring or that he's getting, you know, he's getting to the basket or knocking down some triples, guess what? He's the second worst offensive rated player on the Brooklyn Nets.
Who's
right
that,
now.
Cam Thomas?
Yeah, Cam Thomas, -3.3, only ahead of Javon Carter. So
I wonder if that might, the one thing that maybe this doesn't factor. I'm gonna take one break here in a second, but like the one thing that might not factor out is like garbage time, which is like he played some sort of garbage timey minutes where I think he was just chucking a little bit more. So I wonder if that like cleaning the glass, for instance, Ben Falk's site, like you can filter out garbage time as stats because like no one really wants to count it because it's not a good representation of what happened. I'm not saying Raptor, I'd be surprised, shocked if Raptor didn't do that, but I'm not sure they make the distinction. Okay. I know we're gonna get into a little bit more of this first. It's the new year, New Year's resolutions. I know I've made some, trying to stick to some of them, doing better at some than others. But if you want to get healthy, you want to start eating better, you got to jump into Built Bar right now. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar, but don't let the candy bar piece throw you off there. This stuff is actually healthy for you. They started with the flavors. They layered the protein right underneath it to make sure it tasted good, and away you go. Sometimes eating healthy can be super boring. Not with Built Bar. Like I said, some of these flavors that are out there, coconut, almond, peanut butter, brownie, raspberry, cookies and cream, salted caramel, just a little bit of the sampling that you're going to get on the smorgasbord of flavors over at Built Bar. And then the stats, the analytics, 130 calories, 4 grams of sugar, 4 net carbs, 17 grams of protein to go there on the other side. Compare that to the candy bar. You don't even want to. They just absolutely lap candy bars because this stuff is really good for you, super healthy, and just the way you want to start off your new year. Go to built.com. Use the promo code LOCKED15. Locked like our podcast network, and 15 for the 15% off. You're going to get LOCKED15 to get 15% off at built.com.
Speaking of smorgasbord, over on Bet Online, man, they have got you covered with the best sports wagering action for 2022. They, of course, want to be wishing you a happy new betting year as we continue to march towards some of these playoff races. NFL, it's happening right now, this weekend, coming up. New year and new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up for today. And when you do, you're going to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's from football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and UFC. Write down your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. So just to finish up on the Cam Thomas piece, I think that's something that I think the numbers look better as he moves along. To your point, really, this last game is almost, and the back end of the Spurs one as well, right? These last two times is when he's been playing minutes when it's mattered more. Same thing for Kessler Edwards. He's been in the game in the third quarter. He's in the game in the first half. Like, you get a better sense of how these guys fit in and where their value lies. So we'll see how that shakes out. The other interesting thing to me then, though, is on the defensive side of this, and we'll get into some four-man rotations as well, but along those lines, because you've been missing two of your key offensive players, it obviously bogs down that end of the court. The other thing that I think it does impact, I know that we've gone back and forth on it a little bit. Everyone seems to say Blake Griffin is cooked. It did not look good against Portland, by the way. But he has the best Raptor rating on the team. Now, it's followed by Paul Millsap, so maybe this isn't the best, you know, two guys to list at the top of the list. But Aldrich, Nick Claxton, Bembry, Brown, those are all guys that are positive Raptor ratings on the defensive end of the floor. And the reason why I bring it up is the one thing that I think is also easy to lose sight of here when we talk about heading towards the trade deadline, the Nets need to do something, use the TPEs, all this stuff. Blake Griffin's very small but specific value role on this team is the hardest thing to utilize right now when your offense is not the way that you expect it to be. Because rather than getting to rely on him to be a bigger body and go up against a couple of the guys down low and take some of those hard hits in the lane, even when he's doing that, the offensive side of it has been a relative zero for him, so it diminishes whatever you're going to get from him on the other end of the court. I think that players being in their specific roles that you had desired for them is another part of this that we're not going to get to see here for a little while, again, until we find out specifically when Harris will be back there and the development of some of these other offensive weapons.
Raptor must factor in charges. I'm being serious. I don't know.
He led the league at one point in those. Yeah.
Yeah, so that must be a piece of how they factor in, which, by the way, is a defensive skill. If you can take charges, that's just it's a turnover. So you're forcing a turnover. It doesn't show up as a block or a steal, but
let me just quickly add in too. Do you find it alarming that it's Blake Griffin, Paul Millsap, and even LaMarcus Aldridge? These are the three best defensive rated players on the Brooklyn Nets, and they happen to be three of the oldest and three of when the eye test, you say, maybe the stiffer among the group, let's say.
No, I'm not surprised, only because typically defensive metrics favor teams the guys who are relatively bigs on the team. And so that is usually defense. And that makes sense. You're the last line of protection. You're the closest to the rim. You need to be one of the best defenders on the team to be that, to stop things close to the basket. So there's a reason why bigs would be overweighted probably in terms of defensive metrics, because it is a bigger lift. It's way harder to guard guys as they're close. It's just very simple. It's harder to go. The closer the guy gets to the basket, the harder it is to stop him from scoring. Right. Just the percentage thing, right? This isn't rocket science. I think sometimes people think it is. So, and it's just going to be harder to figure out what that is around the perimeter. So I'm not surprised those are the guys. They're also super smart and crafty, and they're able to, probably just do a little bit more with a diminished skill set, because they kind of understand some of the tricks at this point. And so, but it's alarming in that they still just don't have good defense down in this slot. You would want that to be Claxton I'm sure this is probably another reason why people are just dreaming on De'Aaron Sharpe, is that because those numbers clearly wouldn't pass most people's eye test around this other thing. Right. And I agree with them. I don't think this is not – those are your three best, analytically proven defenders. Your team is probably in pretty serious trouble on the defensive end. So I totally get why people want a change down there. And maybe this is – this probably is a place they can maybe find moderate upgrades in the buyout market they've done before, or small level trades. I think their asset pool is pretty depleted. I know we're not into the trade season yet, but this is probably where they're going to be looking, because everyone's like, oh, we'll get another 3-and-D wing. Well, here's a little newsflash for you. That's literally what every single team in the NBA is looking for. So it's not they're just guys are just going to fall into their lap, but yeah, no, it's not a great sign. And it just goes back to the De'Aaron Sharpe thing. This is exactly why Nets fans are just constantly wanting these guys to be good, because they just don't want these to be the last, these other dudes, Millsap, Blake, LaMarcus Aldridge, to be the last line of defense, because if that's the case, your team's just in trouble.
And I want to talk four-man lineups here too, but just really quickly, it's interesting that Bruce Brown is kind of still right in the wheelhouse. You would think he's positive on the defensive end. The offensive game has struggled a little bit, but Bembry, who the eye test tells you has been valuable at both ends,
sure,
he's a guy that on the overall ratings, taking both ends of the court into account, he's up there for them, as is all the usual suspects you would think. LaMarcus Aldridge actually the best overall. So step aside, Kevin Durant. But the interesting thing for me is this feels like a somewhat unique situation for the Brooklyn Nets, where, to your point, listen, we can talk about that they actually have a total of four TPEs that they can utilize. Two of them are very low level. Some of them
Hold on real
larger.
Quick. Did you say that Aldridge is the best Raptor rating?
Overall Raptor rating, it's going to be Aldridge at a 3.5. And that is because, by the way, Kevin Durant's defensive Raptor rating is a -1.1. James Harden,
this is where I will say, this is where if you're a random fan, or just even me, your eyes will start to glaze over and be like, hold on, we're talking about a stat where Durant's not the best player on the team. What are we talking about here? Now, I get what happens with these stats. This happened with PER forever, is that it overweights bigs. I know this, a lot of these stats just overweight big men because they just do certain other things that these other guys don't. But there's no world where that's the case, right? So
I'm just saying, if we need to pick up a player, trading Kevin Durant is obviously a viable option now, knowing what we have in Aldridge. And I know the very clear point that you're making. Yeah.
I'm not digging on Raptor because I think it's pretty good. And I think all stats kind of struggle with this stuff a little bit because it's really hard to quantify some of these pieces. But I just wanted to clarify. So just in case but there's no world where he's actually the best player on the Nets, right? It's not close. But anyway, we'll do a couple of these lines before we get out of here.
Yeah, I want to do the four-man lineups, and I think it does become interesting to think about a team like the Brooklyn Nets, who maybe are going to be dreaming on, or fans are going to be dreaming on, is our best path forward to develop these young players and have them have valuable roles, because everybody else that wants to win a championship is also going to be vying for some of the same personnel on the buyout market, trade market, etc. So best four-man lineups. I tried to set this as high as, you know, as high as I reasonably could while still getting a sample size here. So 150 minutes, which is not enormous, but is enough to at least get you what it ends up being about the top eight lineups for the Brooklyn Nets. Inside of those, best offensive ratings, you're talking about Aldridge, Durant, Harden, Patty Mills. That seems pretty good. Second best, though, among that does include Bembry. Third among that does include Bembry. So this is where we've talked about him before. It feels pretty clear that he's a guy, and to your point the other night about when are we done with David Duke Jr. in the starting lineup, maybe this is the opportunity where you get to say that. But
well, can I make a distinction about these Bembry lineups? Like, and so, because I'm looking at them too. So one, the other thing that those Bembry lineups have, well, I guess the one is Aldridge, because one is Durant, Mills, Aldridge, Bembry. And then the, I think the other one you're referring to is Durant, Harden, Mills, Bembry, which actually could have just been the same lineup. Like the way, like they could, because all like in four man lineups, Aldridge could have been like the fifth guy in each of those lineups could have been Bembry and Aldridge. Right.
Yes.
Like, so like, so if you, I'm hoping that makes sense for like what everyone's listening to, but like, it's a four man lineup, but you can have two four men lineup that actually have overlapped with each other, because like the fifth man is just the other dude,
it's the other guy
that was left off from the list, right? Like, so I get it. They still played a lot of minutes together, but the key to those minute, the key to those Bembry things is that like everyone else has to be a shooter, right? Like, so if you look at the those breakdowns of those minutes, is like you're not going to get, it's going to be hard. And Aldridge is probably like right on the like dividing line of like what an actual shooter floor spacer is, but he can do it enough. Mm-hmm. But like where Bembry has to, he just has to share the court, because he just has to share the court with everyone else has to be able to shoot. So here's what I mean.
So here's an interesting one. And to bring up Blake Griffin again here, because when you go down this list, offensive rating. So the first one where you go Durant, Griffin, Harden, and Harris, to your point, well, everybody else is a shooter. So that's okay, Griffin, you can be a part of that. But the next one down, just below that, making it the fifth best offensive rating for the Brooklyn Nets, is Durant, Griffin, Harden, and Bruce Brown. Now, it's Durant and Harden, so, but this is where I do, this is where I come back to. I can be using Griffin as a name, anybody you want to put in there, but it's interesting that he seems to be able to hold his weight inside of these lineups, even for as bad as the start of his season has looked. And when you then balance it out with the defensive side of things, Griffin is listed in a handful of these top lineups as far as defensive ratings. And now you get away with it, and it probably helps what Joe Harris lacks defensively, that you have a, you know, Kevin Durant or a James Harden in there with them. But some of these ratings tell me, like a Griffin, Harden, Harris, and Bruce Brown being your second best defensive rated lineup. So you can get away with these things. You can get away with guys that are only servicing a need on one end of the floor or the other. And if Harris being the guy that you don't see right now for the Brooklyn Nets, all of a sudden he's back, and the tandems that you can combine balance out a lot differently than maybe we're forced to look at them with a much more critical eye, because you're lacking player A, player B.
Yeah, like these things worked early in the season. Like, we knew it was, it kind of worked till it didn't, and that was when the end of Blake, right? Like, it worked when it was working, and then, you know, the guys played, you know, especially Durant, like played just so well, so good at the early season. Like, you, I think probably some of these minutes were like peak MVP Durant minutes too, right? Mm-hmm. Durant is the through line, like for every single one of these things. And right. So early on in the season, when we're talking about him as an MVP, I think probably a lot of these minutes are from that. I'm not saying it's bad. Like, it still kind of worked, but it's just one of these things. Like, it just doesn't, is it passing the eye test? I'm not sure. And by the way, it doesn't always need to pass the eye test. Sometimes it doesn't pass the eye test, but it still comes out in the wash on the good side. So it doesn't, a lot of times your eyes can be the worst judge of anything like this, because like it's for like in analytics and for like making projections. Like, sometimes watching the games is literally the worst thing you can do, because you will,
right,
you will ground yourself, convince yourself into ideas. You know, just convince yourself, like you watch one night where the guy was really good, so you're convinced he's like way better than he is, right? Like, this is like why you shouldn't really ever watch the games. Well, I say that back. You should watch the games, but sometimes the games can throw you off around your feelings about something in a way that the numbers won't really like back up. And then you get into this weird uncanny valley where you're not really sure what's real and what isn't. And it all looks a little bit weird, because if you looked at these Blake minutes, you would say, oh, that doesn't really make sense, but it must, because they won all the minutes.
Right.
So so something good did happen, and maybe your eyes are the problem, not actually like what's actually happening.
The Nets are going to have the Chicago Bulls. Kyrie Irving said he's available. Harden's going to be available. maybe this is Kevin Durant take a seat night. Who knows? We'll find out, although it's a pretty big game considering it's at the top of the East. The last thing I'll leave you with, we had said in this last episode about maybe Bruce Brown is on his way out from this team. It's interesting that he shows up in a lot of these lineups as well. Now, at the very least, I think that creates value if you're going to utilize him in some capacity to bring in a more integral piece to what you need to accomplish here, and you feel like you have a redundant asset in Bruce Brown. He's still a valuable player. The eye test tells you he can be important to, if not the Nets, a lot of teams, which is still a good thing for Brooklyn.
Yeah, all it comes down to is, look, we said at the beginning, it's like simple. It's like get the other good, really good players back all playing together, and all these other like secondary pieces will all look better. That's just it. Yep. Sometimes it's just that simple. Okay, head over to YouTube. Make sure you check that out. All of our episodes and more are going up on YouTube. I think we had like 50 comments or something like that in today's episode. People were just really, really getting in there and getting after it. Go and join the group that's discussing hoops over on the Locked On Nets YouTube. I'll put the link in the show notes. Subscribe to the channel.
God, did we really break down a lot of numbers today? A lot of lineups, a lot of projections, a lot of theories, a lot of thinking. What brings to mind? Okay. Hold on, Ty. I would like you to crunch those numbers again. Mike Scott.
Oh, do crunched. Michael Scott Paper Company, RIP. All right, we'll be back again tomorrow talking more Brooklyn Nets basketball.